Hey guys, it's Matt here, and I got a story for you. When I was a kid, I was playing hockey, and oh man, there was this one year, this one team, we could not beat these guys. They were all over us. They were competitive games, though. They were tight, but we just could not beat them. And I remember the last game of the year, it was up against this team, and we were gearing up. We were like, we have to get these guys. When we won that last game, it was so satisfying because we finally got the victory over the team that had dummied us, that had dominated us for so long. I think this is the same thing with sexual brokenness, with sexual sin, where there's been brokenness in our lives and the enemy has come and taken ground and he's dominated us for so long, but we get to make a difference. We get to be part of a message and a mission of freedom. It is such a cool opportunity. So I want to invite you, men and women of any age, to be part of the Action Squad. The Action Squad is something that we're putting together right now. We're looking for 100 people to be on the Action Squad. There's going to be some competitive nature to it. There's prizes. And we're going to work together to help produce a documentary that is literally going to change the world. We're featuring stories of sexual brokenness, of people who have been restored and redeemed, reconciled to God and to people in their lives. And we're going to feature these stories in this world-class documentary that will be a resource for churches to host movie nights, for small groups to watch together, for families to watch and be inspired by. And it's going to highlight the problem in the church, but also show the power of God that is at work when we bring this stuff to light. And so if you want to be part of the Action Squad and help us put this documentary together, I would love for you to go to restoredministries.ca/action squad. You can watch a 10-minute video there that I put together on what it can look like for you to join us in this mission and be part of putting this documentary together. So restoredministries.ca/action squad. Hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Pure Victory Podcast, full of hot tips to help you win at sex, conquer porn, and find purpose in staying free forever. Here are your hosts, Matt Klein and Braden Hafner.
Welcome back to Pure Victory Podcast. Hope you guys are enjoying the weather out there. Today's been a little bit blustery, but the snow is melting, so we're happy.
Well, the listeners in Florida are like, what are you talking about weather? We don't even think about the weather.
No, or California. Always. Weather? What's weather?
Yeah, exactly. So we're loving life now, though.
We're loving Edmonton. Life. There's signs of hope for us, so we're happy.
We're in April, and yesterday my son was like, hey, the snow is almost gone. So there's still snow, but it is almost gone.
You always prepare for one more dump of snow, though. That's like, you know, when you're in Alberta, that's just the mindset.
Oh, even like May long weekend, right?
No. Yeah. You get your hopes up, but not too high because they get dashed pretty quickly exactly. When that dump of snow in May happens. So
exactly.
Anyways, you're hearing our sob story. Well, let's move on. Welcome everybody back to Pure Victory Podcast, like I said. And today we have a great guest on. Nadine Crane is a counselor here in Edmonton. And we are so happy to have her on. First off, that she is one of our references for Family Life Canada. And we so appreciate our counselors, what important work they do. And she is involved in helping counsel. Nadine, you'll have to fill us in here, but you do couples, you do individuals as well too.
Yep.
Yeah, right. Yep. So, and we'll give you all the information if you want to get in touch with her later. But she also has three girls, been married for 14 years. And she wrote some great articles actually on her website that I wanted to highlight today, because this is a topic that we have discussed, Matt and I. And I don't think we've had a full podcast on purity culture, but we've alluded to it. We've talked about it. We both were kind of raised in that. But we wanted to chat with Nadine because she just had such a great kind of take on purity culture in her. I just did some research on it, but she wrote some articles, and we wanted to just discuss some of what she found in that and what she wrote about. So Nadine, thank you so much for being here. And also, we just wanted to get going on this. Could you start off just describing for us what purity culture is?
Yes, of course. So purity, many people will know it's been a theme in the church for a long time. Purity culture itself came about in around 1993. When the True Love Waits movement happened. And so that might ring a bell for some people, because it started in, you know, southern states, but it quickly spread to every single country across the world. And there was campaigns and, you know, signing pledges of waiting till marriage. And this was created in response to raising statistic of teenage pregnancies in the States. And And I think sex education in schools was just becoming more like just like not what the churches, you know, were wanting. And so this became a really big push for churches, youth groups have this True Love Waits teaching. Yeah. I don't know if you want to ask, you can lead me to another question there, or if you want me to just keep going.
Yeah. Well, I was curious, like what were specifically they teaching? I know that they're trying to address what culture was saying in regards to this, which wasn't maybe helpful. It was actually more harmful. But then, so there was this boomerang effect that happened, right? We were trying to want to get away from that. What can we talk about? How can we help people? And there was that kind of reaction. It was a reactionary thing. Am I right, Nadine? It was more of a reactionary. Yeah. So what were the specific messaging? I mean, you mentioned, we signed that contract for purity, lots of different things. I remember my dad, he gave me around that time, not 93, but later on, I had this gold chain and it was like a sign of my purity. And the goal was that I would on my wedding night, I would take that chain off, and it didn't work out that way for me, but that's another story for another time. But
I had a V card, right? I had a V card that I kept in my wallet, but it's just a hotel card that said V card. But then there's a purity ring, right? That people would have.
Purity rings. Yep.
So what were some of the teachings? What were some of the things that people would promote and maybe like the teachings and also maybe the benefit or the harm to those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the teachings that would, I think, be most remembered from, you know, what came out of it, because I will acknowledge, you know, like it was reactionary, but it was coming from a good place, right? Of wanting to lead youth to like, how can they follow God? How can they stay on the right path and not fall into sin? But the way that it was presented became quite black and white. If you wait until marriage, there are these blessings, right? So if you don't have sex, you stay a virgin until marriage, your marriage is blessed, your sex life is blessed, you will find, right, a wonderful spouse, right? These were things that were either assumed, alluded to, or in some cases promised, right, outright, that you receive that blessing when you put in this commitment and this and waiting. But on the other side of that, there was, okay, if you don't wait, right, or if you already haven't, I youth groups had many different versions of this, but there was, okay, these like metaphors, they'd pass around a styrofoam cup and everyone would rip it up a little bit, right? And at the end they'd say, this is, and I mean, I think they said this generally, but it was, so I think, you know, male or female, but a lot of them were pointed a lot at girls as well, right? So like, you know, this would be your worth, or, you know, do you think someone would want to take a drink out of this cup? That, you know, that was the messages, chewed gum or a rose petal that everyone just pulled roses off, right? So it was the worth, especially for females, their worth was tied to whether or not they stayed a virgin for marriage. And so that was alluded to, you know, someone wanting to marry them, but that, I mean, this is taught within a church, right? So that's very, very easily connected to what God thinks, right, about them as well. And so the blessings out of marriage, and then it affecting, worth and like your purity and worth. And then the last one was how they would talk about, or how it ended up reflecting on our bodies, right? And if we, that our bodies are dangerous and sinful, you know, if we listen, right, to our own desires, right, it'll lead us down that wrong path. And I mean, I'm not saying that that's incorrect, I'm not saying that that's incorrect, but that it became so, so black and white that or the way that it was taught in like, there became for many people, right, a split between my body and my sexuality, and then here's my spirituality over here. And I have to keep those separate, because obviously no one can live without having some sin, right, in whatever way. So that, especially in, you know, modesty for girls, so talking about how they dressed, in some cases went to an extreme where females like just felt like, well, that it's just sinful to have a female body, right? In some way.
Yeah, I just heard the story of this girl, and she's an adult now, but she was talking about her youth group, and she was saying that the youth leader went around, the pastor went around to all the girls and said, if I tap you on the shoulder, I want you to stand over there. If I don't, stand over there. And so two different sides of the room. And so finished, and all the girls that the youth pastor had tapped on the shoulder, they were told that they weren't dressed properly. And if a boy was here, they would be, they would be lusting, and it would be their fault.
That's terrible.
it's terrible. And it was like, man, these girls, like, it's bad for them. But also the guys, like, oh, we're just animals. We don't have a say in
it. No control.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. So yeah, the messaging is just so bad, but it's so focused on the behavior and just so void of the grace of God, which is wild. Mm-hmm. So what have you seen coming out of that? Maybe people are our age and older, maybe a little bit younger. I guess we're old now, but just people who grew up in that purity culture. What have you seen, just in terms of negative effects in marriage or in singles?
Yeah, well, from the promise, right? So especially for singles, I know many women, right, that have like, well, I did what I was supposed to. You know, I've been faithful to God. I've been in ministry, and they're in their maybe late 30s, 40s, or later, and there is resentment, right? There is like, where is what I was promised? But on the other hand, marriages, right? People that it kind of like came into place exactly as it's supposed to, right? Okay, here's like the ideal picture of what the leaders and the true love waits people, right? That's what they wanted to happen. And those marriages, and I'm not going to say in every case, right? But there's many that have struggled because for women, right? They can't just to flip that switch to be like, okay, now sex is good. This is a good thing. I'm allowed to enjoy this, or I don't have to, like, you know, what you were sharing, Matt, about the females being blamed for men's temptation, right? Just trying to change that whole script in your head or even theological belief about sex as soon as you get married, it's a really hard turnaround. So, you know, there's many marriages and sometimes it's never really addressed or talked about. That's why I think it's so important for this to be brought up, is that there is these struggles preventing couples from having just intimacy in their marriage that is enjoyable for both, or, you know, that is actually drawing them closer together. On the male side of it, right? Like, so those messages were geared towards women, but as you referenced this as well, it's like those messages that are given to the guys when everything's focused, right, on the females, that you do kind of get that feeling like, all right, okay, it's, well, I can't say that from my experience, right? But from what I've heard, right? So if it's taught like, okay, well, it's her responsibility, she needs to dress properly, then that does affect how, you know, how boys grow up. And it's not the area that I studied as much, right, or their experience. So I won't speak to that myself, but it impacts both sides. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, my story with this totally was like, in my teen years, I mean, I'm looking at porn rampantly and behind closed doors, but I see that I'm hearing this messaging. Well, I'm a teenage brain, right? So I'm thinking, well, I'm not pure. I'm not good. God doesn't love me. He doesn't accept me. I can't talk to anybody about this because I failed already. And now you talk about the cup, right? Well, I'm too damaged. I'm too far gone. So whatever, I'm just giving up. And there's that, you create this tier list. Like, there's those that are on this tier and I'm on this tier. Mm-hmm. Or two different sides, two different teams. And you just feel like you're other. And then that was, I mean, one of the reasons, there was many, but why I fell away from God for years in my teens, because I just couldn't come to terms with that messaging that I was taking on. Maybe it was an intended message, of course, but that's what I was hearing. And mm-hmm. and that's what happened. And I think so for many of us, that was something, a message that we had a hard time with. It not only affected us when it came to sex and when we moved into marriage, but just our identity in Christ. Like, we had a hard time squaring away some of this messaging, just receiving God's love and acceptance for us, just having a hard time receiving that. And even what you're saying, Nadine, with marriage, like, it's so true, because don't think about sex. Don't think about sex. Don't think about sex. And then you get married. Now, all of a sudden, you've done it right. So now you're going to have a great sex life. It doesn't work that way, does it? And I think that so many people, like, you sold me a bill of goods, but now I'm realizing sex is actually really hard. like I'm having to learn this intimacy thing with my spouse, and it's not as easy as it was promised for me. It's actually some work. There's some things about that I didn't realize that I was dealing with, or my spouse was dealing with, and learning this together takes time. And I didn't know that. And so there's, you're right. There's kind of this resentment. Like, I did everything right. Why is this not working out the way that it was promised to me? That can be really difficult. So what are some things, like, even out of your article, how does someone who's grown up in that messaging, what are some things that we can start to do to change the script, flip the narrative, and actually come to a true place in this regard and understand the way God designed sex and understand in our identity how he loves us and sees us? And how do we start to change some of this messaging, which is really deeply ingrained at times?
Yeah. You know, I always point to the what are the theological, you know, pieces of this, right? Because that's when it comes down to it, right? Our, like you shared, thinking how God would views us, right? That we're, that's what can push people or teens away from the church or God in general. Even recognizing that purity culture really took things back to like legalism of Old Testament in a way, right? Like it, because the grace of Jesus, I mean, it was being taught, but that's not the message that was going deep, right? And what people were walking around with, they were getting the message of, I can't, it's like as if I can't approach the temple of God because of this sin, right? That Old Testament, right, experience, which takes away everything Christ did, right? That completely eliminates that. And so really that theological understanding of how, you know, the work that God did. And I mean, I write about it on my website there, of God, you know, coming to the garden, right? And then temple, the tabernacle, temple, and then finally in Jesus, right? As a person, and the work that was done so that we could just approach and be with God, even though we are not, you know, perfect and holy like he is. And the fact that Jesus, the women that he approaches, the people he approaches, right? All these stories we know, it's like, it's good to think about, would any of these people have fit this, you know, purity culture bill, right? Or this, you know, this, the status, right? That high status that evangelical Christianity would have said, these are the you know, these are the best ones following God. They wouldn't have, you know, like the bleeding woman, the woman at the well, and the blind men, you know, all these people that were seen as sinful, right? And they were outcast. And that's who Jesus approached. And I think one of the biggest theological things, so strings through the Bible, is how purity was about being able to be in God's presence. That was the whole goal of it. So when we talk about purity culture, right, and it ends up being aimed so much towards like marriage, right, a physical marriage or that relationship, but really purity is meant for us to be in God's presence. And nothing we are going to do is going to undo what Jesus, right, already did, so that we can be in God's presence. And that understanding, that the theological truth of that, is it takes a lot of pressure off of, can I approach God, right? You know, after messing this up, right? It maybe doesn't make it easy, but being able to understand that, I guess, would be the first part of that.
Well, it is, yeah. Like having, who can ascend the mountain of God? Those with a pure heart, clean right. hands. And it's that God cleanses us. We can't do it on our own, because mm-hmm. he wants us. It's not like strive, 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 and if you're good, then you mm-hmm. can approach him. It's Hebrews 4, like everything is laid bare before him. But Jesus was tempted in every way. He could empathize with you, lead you out, and you could approach the throne with confidence. Yeah. With confidence.
That's what a great word, with confidence. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the minute after you commit sexual sin.
Yeah.
Everything's laid bare. Yeah. You can approach him with confidence to receive grace and mercy. It's so cool that we can do that. That message was so lost. I remember hearing a woman where she'd saved herself, her husband saved herself, then they had trouble sexually in marriage, and she's like mad at God because, hey, I saved myself and now this is what I get. like, where did this curse come from? Mm-hmm. And another couple I remember talking about that they had not like had intercourse, but they had fooled around with different boyfriends, girlfriends in their years before we get married. But then they come together and they don't have a good sex life. There's all this trouble. Like Brandon's talking, we got to figure each other out and it's harder. And we're just so not equipped. We're not equipped to have sex, to have sex talks in marriage, but also we're just like, oh, I must be cursed because I did something.
Right.
And then we take that mindset into it. And then we feel punishment, feel guilt and condemnation because of what we've done rather than living in the grace of God, approaching him with purity in our hearts. So I love what you're saying. I remember for me, it was always purity meant sexual things. The word intimacy too is another one, right? People talk about, oh, the last time I was intimate with my wife. Well, what is that? Are you just talking about sex?
Or right. Because that's one kind of intimacy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. So it's interesting though, what you're saying, Nadine, because purity is meant to be in the presence of God. And we've taken this thing that's supposed to be about his presence and we've made it all about sex. Which is a real interesting thing that's what the world has done too, is elevated sex to be above God. And in the church with purity culture, we've done that too. So with people who have had those mistakes, Nadine, or there's been guilt, sin, all of those things, like how do you walk with people maybe in your clinic or at your church or just in your life where we're ministers of the gospel, but how do you walk people out of that guilt and get them to see things as the Lord does?
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things I like to highlight, because it's just, you know, in general, it's kind of missing, I find, in church culture, is the importance of our how we view our body and just our as ourselves. And kind of like I said, that we can tend to separate our spirituality and our, you know, physicality, you know, sexuality and our bodies over here. But spirituality is over here. There's nothing spiritual we can do without our body. We can't read the Bible or worship or, you know, sing or, you know, even pray. Like, you know, like we need our whole, you know, we need our body to be able to do that. Being able to, you know, I work with clients a lot on just going from here, right? So your mind, right? And even in a Christian sense, right? Just that head knowledge, that scriptural knowledge, and how do we practice, you know, being in our body, right? That, like, you know, there's that a common phrase now of, you know, being present, right? Wherever you are. But there's a lot of people, right, that we can't accept ourselves because we have you know, shamed our body for such a long time. And I think often we can get away with thinking like, well, that's my body, right? You know, like as if it is separate, but it's not how God created, you know, our body and our spirit. It's created this to all interact together. So ways that I do that is like, you know, walking through how our body it is good, right? And how it is something that we need to connect with God, but also, you know, it starts with the body, right? And then that leads into how sorry, sex with our spouse, right, can be good, right? So for those that struggle with sexual shame, which is something that, you know, I'm sure women or men, right, could experience, but for women it could be, you know, there's nothing sinful or wrong happening, but a feeling of shame happens, right? So it went right after, and to be able to learn how to undo that, right? And so that is like the questions that we're usually too afraid to really ask. What does God really think, right, about me and my spouse having sex, right? Or even these sexual desires in my body. And so this kind of, I'm going to share a spectrum of kind of, so your own experience, but if you have children, right. And if you're, you know, raising kids, thinking of how are we going to walk them through this? I think it really, the big thing it starts with, right, which would have been right before purity culture would be taught, is just puberty, right. In general, like the changes in the body where we realize that we are a sexual being, and all these strange things happen, which our parents may not have, you know, responded well to or been able to really like talk with us about. But God created, you know, that process for a reason. And to be able to even just look at that in itself, but for women, and because I have daughters, I'm, you know, this is something my current kind of passion is looking at just the menstrual cycle, right? And for women and how it theologically reflects scriptural truths. And, you know, when that can be presented to a young girl who's just learning about these things and, oh, wait, I don't have to be shameful about, you know, like this process my body's going through. It actually reflects God's image as well. You know, I think that is a building block for changing how we ourselves, right? And then leading into, you know, the struggle or shame with sex or even just desires, right? That we have.
Yeah. One, I think just even what you're doing and even all these articles and what you're talking about now is the conversation. Let's have the conversation. Let's talk about it. Where maybe in the past, this was just all pushed down and we don't talk about these things. So that creates a lot of either curiosity or some stigma and maybe shame. And so all of those aren't great. And so curiosity can be a good thing, but sometimes the curiosity where it went was, let's explore by experiencing and doing some of these things that caused a lot of damage too. But I just love what you're sharing there, Nadine. And I'm just curious, I know we're kind of moving away from that. Like the purity culture was something for all of us that are millennials that we live through, but moving forward from that, because there has been some backlash to that, a lot of strong reaction to what occurred from purity culture. And we've seen a lot of that occur in the past few years. Where do you kind of see things going? Because I know that even what you're talking about, I mean, a lot of the messaging, even specifically, because I'm curious, you being a mom of girls, there's some difficult messages still out there that we are traversing. You know, you do like in the purity culture. Yeah. You had this kind of more shame-based thing that happened where I don't want to think about my body. My body seems shameful. I don't know where the desires come from and all these different things. And then you have the other in an extreme is I only have value based on the way that I look externally or what I can bring to the table in that regard. But where do you kind of see things going? Cause we still have that to an extreme. So moving from, you know, millennials to Gen Z, to even to Gen Alpha, I think it is. Is it Alpha Gen? What's the one of Gen Z? Yeah. What are your kids, Nadine? I think they're the Alpha generation, right? Is that? I think they went back to the top. Anyways.
They're awesome.
They're awesome.
A for awesome.
Yeah. Where do you kind of see things going? Because I know that the world we're living now is different than what it was 10 years even ago. So what are you kind of seeing and how would you kind of talk to your girls moving into this time that we're in?
Yeah. Well, I think something I'm seeing, and I think everyone's experiencing, right, is that as opposed to the, you know, 90s, early 2000s when purity culture happened, different evangelical churches, right, are finding just different positions on a lot of things, right? And different, all these different levels of how conservative or liberal, right? And then that impacts how, you know, what they're teaching. And so, I mean, it's always been the case, but I think more than ever, right, as parents, you know, it's like purity culture should be an example of why, you know, you can't always just trust or you shouldn't just trust, right? Okay, send my children off to youth group and church and they'll learn what they need to know. Yeah. We do have to be, you know, asking them and teaching and talking about the most important things, right? We want to make sure they know and are learning. And for, you know, for my girls, you know, it's a scary, I mean, I don't have any in the teen age yet. I mean, that's a hard, that comes with its own hard decisions. But I think the theological, you know, teaching that theological understanding of your body is good, you know, and God, you know, God created it. But there is these temptations out there. And the middle ground, right, between just don't have sex, right? And do whatever you want, right? That middle ground is where I think it happens in the conversations, right? It's about parents, right? Or leaders, teachers being open to the curious questions, right? That teens would have and being a person that they feel comfortable asking the questions, I think is the biggest thing. And that's my goal. I think that's what my husband and I've just worked on with our girls that, I mean, right now it's just, you know, they come up with these random questions or awkward times to ask things about body parts. Right. And then, we try to answer if it's an appropriate time to answer, we try to answer it without being like, you know,
right.
We don't talk about that. Right. Or just giving a reaction with no answer. We try to answer it. Right. Either like, in a scientific way, you know, like just being like, well, that is, you know, we're big on using real names for body parts, right? So, you know, just the how the function of it or whatever, right? Or if we need to, you know, well, we'll talk about that, you know. I want to talk about it with you, maybe, you know, when you're a little bit older or in a different place. But just trying to keep the conversations going so that they know, like, oh yeah, I can ask them. So that when it comes to, right, like, oh, okay, now my child is dating, right? And it's like that those conversations don't feel like it's, you know, it's not like that, you know, the one sex talk that I think a lot of people experience, right? If you had one, it's like that awkward sit down and you're trying to just get through it and you never want to like ask any questions or talk to your parents again about it. Mm-hmm. That's not what you want to with your kids to be able to help guide them and because really, right, in all parts of parenting you want to help them build up the ability, right, to make the wise decision so that when they go out on their own, which when we're talking about sexuality, really by the time they're 13, 14 they're going to be making decisions, right, on their own that we may not know about, especially when they have the driver's license and they go with their friends. So to know at least that we have equipped them, right, as best that we can to make those decisions. And I think that the core, I was going to say purpose or idea of purity culture, right, I still agree with that there, but I think it's more not teaching as black and white, but well, this is how God, you know, God created sex and marriage, you know, for that purpose. And there's no, you know, not giving any guarantee, right? But just that focused more on the theological, right, purposes for that. And I think something that I've landed on for myself is that if we really focus on that building up theological understanding in our kids, they have what they need, right? And if we're helping them develop in their relationship with God, as long as they are, you know, they are choosing that, right, as well, then they have everything they need to be able to like stay on the right path or find it again, right? If they veer off at some point.
That's right. Oh, I love it. It's so true. It's the houses, right? The two houses in scripture where you found it, you're built on the rock. It's like, you hear the words of God and you live that out. Like, you know, the wisdom, you need to know the word. Or how can a young man keep his way pure, right? By living according to the word of God. We need the word of God and to know that. There's been so much misunderstanding scripturally and people, oh man, I heard a clip recently, just a beauty, not really, of a mega church pastor telling the women in his audience, like, man, when you get to that wedding night, your husband's been waiting for it all night. You just stand there, do what he tells you to do, say what he tells you to say. It's like, whoa, what? This is like the total opposite of scripture. Wow, yeah. 1 Corinthians 7 talks about husbands serving wives before wives serving husbands. Mm-hmm. And that's the picture of Jesus serving the church. And it's so, so different. So there's been so much scriptural misunderstanding. I appreciate, Nadine, that you bring that up because it's encouraging, I think, for parents and for us to know that we can go to the Bible. And there's answers. Sometimes we feel like, oh, I don't know what to say, but the answers are there. And we can even ask the Lord to highlight certain things. And then we're not talking about the wee-wee goes in the vajayjay and we're using real words, right? And there doesn't need to be shame around it. So I appreciate that. What's your mentality I was curious about this with your kids, your girls, in being proactive versus reactive with that. Like, you know, a proactive approach would be the sex talk. Okay, I need to sit down with my 13-year-old on their birthday or right after,
right,
have the sex talk, and then I've done it and that's it. But reactive is more like as things go. But I think both are important. Your kids are, I think, older than mine. So what's been your approach with just bringing it up as it comes, or how do you approach that?
Well, I love, you know, kids books and things like that. And so I've found some, you know, over time, just some helpful books that are like, you know, oh, it feels like story time for them, but I'm like, oh, but yeah, it's just really highlighting, oh, your body's a good thing. You know, like it's not, you know, just like very simple things, right, for kids. And then just recently I've come across some bit more like the books that are like, you guys are probably familiar with the good pictures, bad pictures, that kind of, you know, prepares kids for to not look at pornography. And, you know,
just started reading that. It with our 5-year-old. Started reading it.
Yeah. And so kind of books like that, you know, I find things that aren't like, you know, I don't want to sit down like my 7-year-old and be like, all right, now's the time. You know, this is very important. You know, just make this really big pressure filled conversation. But more so, oh, let's look at this book. Oh, do you have any questions about this? And I have there's a series I found about an anatomy. So it's a doctor that's created this kid's book illustrated with just like anatomy. And it talks about it, but it talks about it as kids. It's like in a storybook way, but it's very informative. Like as an adult, I'm like, I need, like as an adult, I appreciate all the information in there. And I had them out. My 9-year-old just started reading through the one there. And I just was like, just let her read it. And I'm just getting to the point now of like, you know, those next steps of like, okay, how do I want to structure a bit more, right? Talking about this, because my oldest is the age where this year the school's going to start doing their, I guess, the beginnings of sex ed stuff. And so, you know, how to just start talking about that before or during, while she's, you know, learning about that in school. That's where I've been at.
I love it. We have a series like that, like what you're talking about too. It's 30 days of sex talks that we have with our kids, and there's different books for different age groups, and we've worked through that along with Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. But what's the name of the series that you have, Nadine?
Yeah, so it's called Anatomy for Kids, and Shelley Metten is the author of them. So they have a series for some for girls, some for boys. And I have there's a one for ages 5 to 7, one for ages 8 to 9, and one for ages 10 plus. And they do have at least one or two older than that. Those are the ages of my kids. So those are the ones I have, but it's been a very good mixture of like illustration enough that kids are interested in it, but the information is very, very helpful. And
awesome. That's great. And I think that's so important too. Like for parents that, you know, you educate yourself and learn how to go about doing this, because sometimes this wasn't obviously modeled for us. I know for myself, my mom and dad, I mean, it was kind of that awkward conversation. So if we can learn how to create an ongoing place and space where our kids can come talk to us, that'll create a better messaging, I think, that will serve them well moving into adulthood, and help us maybe move more into the good things of purity culture. You know, addressing, yes, of course, we got to be responsible for our actions. We want to follow God's model for us and be led in that. But at the same time, understand his love for us. And he doesn't put shame on us. And to have that understanding that just fuels our life in regards to our identity and how we live out when we get married. So I really appreciate everything that you're talking about, Nadine. Where can people find you?
So NadineCrane.com that's where my information about counseling and my website, and then you can contact me through that as well. If any, I enjoy doing, you know, speaking or whatever, if some a church or anything, so you can contact me through the website as well.
Awesome. And that's where you can check out some of her articles stuff and other stuff as well too. And I highly recommend you do that, because it's great. Thanks, Nadine, so much for being on. We really appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
And everybody out there, hope you're doing well. Again, we're praying you on, and thank you so much for engaging with us. Please share the podcast, give us some reviews, spread the word. It helps us just reach more people. So we thank you for all of those that are doing that as well. So check in with you next week. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to hear more, please visit purevictorypodcast.com to subscribe. This podcast was made possible by the generous donations of our subscribers. If you would like to help support the cause financially, once again, please visit purevictorypodcast.com.